Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The last thing in the world the NFL wanted to see on Thursday Night Football. To start out week number 7, early second quarter. The last thing in the world. The last image, the last moment, the last scene. The very worst nightmare of the NFL. And that's how we start out week number 7. Now, there's best case scenario and there's worst case scenario. But right now, what we know is, again, the last thing that football fans wanted to see.
DeMarcus Robinson comes in motion and Mahomes sneaks it. And somebody better guard that ankle. Mitchell Schwartz and Martinez Rankin will guard the ankle like the guards outside Buckingham Palace. It looks like it's a first down on the quarterback sneak by Patrick Mahomes. Is he off the field? He is not. He might be hurt, Kendall. They are calling to the sideline. Mahomes may be hurt.
Oh, no.
As he went on the quarterback sneak, he is down on his left hip, and he has taken his helmet off.
That moment on the Chiefs radio network, Mitch Holtis is the play-by-play voice. Early in the second quarter on a 4th and 1, a 2-yard quarterback sneak, more like a quarterback plunge for Mahomes. And Holtis references the ankle because it was heavily taped. Remember, it's been the ankle that has hobbled Mahomes a bit over the past couple of weeks. Both losses for the Kansas City Chiefs. But this was not the ankle. As one Denver Bronco said it, who was right there, I've never seen a kneecap point that direction before. So it was a dislocated kneecap. Patellar tendon is the proper medical term, but for you and I, dislocated kneecap. And now there's best case scenario and there's worst case scenario. It was good to see Mahomes able to walk on his own power with his own 2 feet, not needing much support once he was up and moving. And that's because when you put a dislocated kneecap or dislocated shoulder, any type of a dislocation, once you put it back in place, it alleviates a lot of the pain. But it doesn't mean there isn't further damage around his kneecap. And that's what the Kansas City Chiefs will have to wait to find out. The all-important, critical MRI that will come up on Friday. But right now, the NFL MVP sidelined by a knee injury. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. We're inside the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studios. They understand it's not just a mortgage, it's your mortgage, and that's the difference. Rocket Mortgage, push button, get mortgage. Now, coming up in 30 minutes, we'll head to Denver, and we will talk to Benjamin Albright, who covers the NFL. It is also part of the Broncos pre and post on KOA, which is a heritage station there in Denver. And he's a guy that does press box, does sidelines. He roams around and is really connected to the Broncos, who were very optimistic going into this week 7 kickoff. A home game against the Chiefs after Kansas City had dropped back-to-back games and the Broncos had won 2 in a row. Clearly, the wheels came off. And so we'll talk week 7. We'll talk AFC West. We'll get the latest on Pat Mahomes, as well as what now with the Denver Broncos, because they were thoroughly embarrassed on Thursday Night Football. But here's a question. Which team was more embarrassed? Was it the Broncos or was it the Yankees? Man, it's been the Yankees' bats all season long. They've overcome the pitching issues when they needed to. And it's not even like the pitching was that bad. Certainly not Masahiro Tanaka. One mistake, essentially. But still, three runs should be a very small foothill for the Yankees offense to overcome. And they started out not with a hit, but with a walk. Bases loaded walk off Zach Greinke in the first inning. And you could tell the fans there at Yankee Stadium were ready to just, well, there's no roof, but blow the proverbial roof off the building. But then bases loaded. The bases loaded in the third. Actually, I should say that. Twice bases loaded for the Yankees, and they couldn't get a runner across after that. Aaron Judge strikes out with a runner in scoring position to end the second. And so those moments where Zach Greinke was seemingly on the ropes, the Yankees could not come up with a big hit when they needed it. And the numbers right now over these three losses in the ALCS, the Yankees are 1-for-16 with runners in scoring position, and they have left 26 men on base. Now, one of those games goes back to Houston. The Astros also have been fairly meager when it comes to runners in scoring position. In fact, I think the number is right around 200. That's the batting average for the Astros with runners in scoring position. Just a big hit here or there. And where the Yankees have done this all season, they can't seem to come up with one since the opener of the series. And so we'll hear from the Yankees clubhouse, the Astros clubhouse, George Springer, Carlos Correa. Now Houston sits one win away from the World Series and a matchup with the Washington Nationals. Thanks so much for joining us, our final show of the work week. You can find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio. Also on our Facebook page, After Hours with Amy Lawrence. We are off and running in Week 7, so we'll talk a lot more about what's in store this weekend in the NFL. Some big games in college football, too. And will we end up seeing the ALCS go the distance? The Yankees have made this really difficult for themselves, because now it's Justin Verlander starting in Game 5 in the Bronx in a closeout situation. You know how much he loves those scenarios, right? You know how much he loves those big moments and these pressure-packed stages. This is what he lives for. So a lot of tension on Friday night. Something else that I heard that I thought was really interesting, and we know how good the Yankees have been at home all season. Their first three home series of the year, going way back to the spring, they lost. So they lost those first three series, but since then have not lost a series at Yankee Stadium, going back to the very beginning of the season. That's how good they've been at home. And with Zach Greinke, the guy that they had roughed up in the opener of the series, where Tanaka had thrown six scoreless, this appeared to be the opportunity. And right away, as I say, Greinke faces seven batters in the first, and he walks Brett Gardner with the bases loaded. Now he does strike out Gary Sanchez to leave the bases loaded and limit the damage. But man, didn't it feel like, whoo, it's just a matter of time. But then he strikes out Judge, as I mentioned, to leave a runner on second to end the second. And after that, seemed to get stronger. Whereas Masahiro Tanaka has one blip. Chad Green, who comes in to replace him, isn't the lockdown reliever, the lockdown relief that they needed. And this one goes from tight and close and tense to not so much.
Now the pitch. And that ball's driven to left field. Back on it, Gardner. He's on the warning track. There it goes, George Springer. A three-run shot gives the Astros the lead. It's 3-1.
Here's the 0-1. And that's hit pretty well and pretty deep to left. Gardner is going back, looking up. See you later! A three-run home run for Carlos Correa. And the Astros go up 6-1. Correa with his second home run of the series.
Gary Sanchez had a two-run home run in the sixth, but this was after that run or that second home run there by Carlos Correa. So the 6-1 advantage, while it wasn't the end of the game, just imagine if that's not what happens with Chad Green when he relieves Tanaka. And then the defense for the Yankees. Also brutal. And it's been so reliable in this series. This is, it's so similar to the NLCS, in my opinion, where the Cardinals that we saw, who fought and scratched and clawed their way into the NL Central title and then through that five-game series that they played against the Braves, weren't anything like themselves in the NLCS. This Yankees team has been, again, using the offense all season to cover up the woes of the pitching. Their starting pitching's not been a strength, though their bullpen's been really good. And the Yankees have done it with guys who weren't ever supposed to be regulars because they put a record 30 guys on IL this year. Wait, IL, IR, IL. 30 guys. And so they were forced to rely on hitters in and out of the lineup that they never expected to be there, which gave them experience and increased their depth. And yet now you would think they don't have options. Who can they turn to? Who's going to step up? It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. So now the Yankees face not an impossible task, but what was a foothill, what set up to be a game four in which they should have the advantage, has turned into a 3-1 mountain for Aaron Boone's club.
I think they embraced the challenge. Obviously, we got our backs against the wall now, and we've had it there in many ways from the adverse situations we've faced all year. And I know these guys will come focused and ready to go tomorrow, and I can't wait to see them go out there and play our game.
So because of the rainout on Wednesday, they've lost their travel day, of course. They play three games in a row, meaning games 3, 4, and 5. At Yankee Stadium. It's a 2-3-2. And their only goal now is to push this back to Houston. Forget who you're facing. Forget how good Justin Verlander and Gerrit Cole have been all season. You got to forget that. The goal has to be push this back to Houston. Extend the series. The thing is, the Astros, they're in the same boat. They feel the same way. They're not taking anything for granted. And that comes from several years of being on this postseason stage, going to a Game 7 in a World Series on the road. I mean, they understand you don't count your chickens before they hatch. But they also have to like where they are now. Again, taking two games in a row at Yankee Stadium where the Yankees have been so good all season long. You can find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio. A lot of you weighing in and answering my question. And I don't mean it to be snarky, but there is some... sarcasm's not really the right word. There is a tone to my tweet. Which team was embarrassed more thoroughly on Thursday? The Yankees or the Broncos? High expectations for both, and neither one delivered. Our phone number is 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4227. Already your tweets are coming in. You can find us on Facebook as well. And straight ahead, you'll hear from the Astros, like George Springer and Carlos Correa and A.J. Hinch. They are now poised one win away from another trip to the World Series. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Presley, the high set, delivers another 1-2. Swing and a miss. Struck him out on a pitch inside. A fastball. And the inning is over. Yankees load him up with one out, and they get nothing. Pitch on the way. And Torres lifts this one. Shallow right field. Long run for Springer. Slowing down by the line. Makes the catch in fair territory. And that is the ball game. The Houston Astros defeat the New York Yankees 8-3. They go up 3-1 in the ALCS.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
On the Astros Radio Network, Robert Ford and Steve Sparks, they do a great job. And they obviously have called a Game 7 of a World Series. And unless the Yankees can come up with an historic comeback, the Astros are headed back to the Fall Classic. So Friday night's Game 5 will begin actually an hour earlier than Thursday. So it begins at 7 o'clock New York time, 6 o'clock in the evening Houston time, against Justin Verlander and then James Paxton for the Yankees. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Our toll-free line is 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4CBS. It's brought to you by Geico with a quick way you can save money. Switch to Geico. Go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes you could save 15% or more on your car insurance. Zach Greinke settled in after that first inning in which he walked home a run with the bases loaded and then had to escape from a bases loaded jam. He retired 9 in a row until the bottom of the fifth, leaving 2 on for Ryan Pressly, who then promptly walks the bases loaded. Again, another opportunity for the Yankees. But Pressly rallies to strike out Gleyber Torres and then Edwin Encarnacion to escape that jam. And for A.J. Hinch, while there's a lot of traffic on base with the Yankees, and there was a home run by Gary Sanchez in the sixth, getting what he did from Zach Greinke and the bullpen for 4 2/3 innings after that, couldn't have asked for much more in New York.
Zach getting out of the first with only one run, you know, having spent a lot of pitches and a lot of stressful pitches and some really good at-bats by the Yankees was pivotal for us to just kind of hang in there. I was asked a lot about our bullpen coming into this series. The series is not over, but so far this series, our bullpen has been huge to complement a really good starting rotation.
Yeah, going back to game number two when both bullpens were taxed, that was, of course, the last time Justin Verlander started, but the game went into the 11th, went 5 hours. The way that they pitched tonight, because Greinke was out early, the bullpen was responsible for 4 2/3 innings pitched, only allowing 2 runs on 2 hits and striking out 8 Yankees. So even when the Greinke weak link, I'm using my air quotations, he's not been as good in the postseason. Even when it's the Greinke weak link out there, the bullpen, the rest of the arms that Hinch has at his disposal have been more than adequate. They've been tremendous. And the lineup hasn't been great, right? So making a lot of the Yankees, leaving 26 runners on base and going 1-for-16 with runners in scoring position. But the Astros haven't been that much better. Over the course of this ALCS, they're roughly 200, hitting 200 with runners in scoring position. But the guys who've been there before, like Jose Altuve, like Carlos Correa, like George Springer, these guys come through, even if it's only once here, once there. The fact is, the lineup is still formidable, and it challenges the New York pitching staff.
We try to pass the baton. You know, it's an offense where it's not about individual anything. It's about what's best for the team, and it's do anything that you possibly can to get the baton onto the next guy. I don't think there's anybody in our lineup who cares what position that they're hitting in.
Maybe not, but it is worth noting that George Springer has more home runs than any other player in Astros postseason history, and they always seem to come at critical junctures. And for Springer and Altuve and Correa, there was a stretch unique to each of them, individual this year, in which they had to fight through injuries, especially Correa, who missed 2 months of this regular season and had to watch his teammates go on without him.
It's been a tough year for me, going through a lot, and then, you know, come here in the postseason and be able to contribute to my team. It means everything.
So they both come up with 3-run home runs. And again, the Yankees unable to capitalize when they had the opportunity. But you just wonder, think about the timing with the Gary Sanchez home run that comes in the sixth after Correa hits his dinger. There are plenty of opportunities for the Yankees to make this a different series. Anything can happen, but this is a difficult hole to climb out of. And also difficult to see CC Sabathia walk off the mound at Yankee Stadium, where he's had so many memorable moments after hurting his shoulder. So we now know, according to multiple reports, it was a strained shoulder. But to see him leave the mound like that, and he's battled injuries all season, of course. But Aaron Boone put him on this postseason roster, put him on the ALCS roster. He's made a couple of different appearances, not as a starter, obviously, but spot relief out of the bullpen. And the look on his face when he left the game, it was painful. He obviously was dejected, really frustrated, yelling into his glove. But just to walk off the mound, and maybe it helped a little bit that he got a standing ovation in addition to the players from both dugouts cheering for him. But if this is the last that we see of CC Sabathia, and there's a very real possibility that could be the case, this is a tough way to go. And yet his teammates admire him so much.
You can never say that man never, you know, gave his all. You know, every single time he went out there, he had to rip the ball, rip his jersey off, get him off that mound. And, you know, he got everything out of that arm. And man, that's a warrior right there. You know, that's why he's been a leader of this team for so many years. And that's why he has so much respect around the game and, you know, in the stadium. And, no, it was tough to see, but that's our leader, man. He left it all out there.
It's Aaron Judge talking about CC Sabathia, his impact on the team, the clubhouse, and certainly that's one big reason why the Yankees brought him back. He and Brett Gardner, the only Yankees remaining from the last time they won the World Series. And now they're going to need all of that heart, all of that character, all of that wisdom and experience that they've drawn from CC Sabathia and Gardner and some of the other veterans. So which team was more thoroughly embarrassed on Thursday? George says on Twitter, A-Law Radio, the Yankees. Them thoroughly pummeling the Astros and going on to the World Series was a no-brainer. It was expected of them. Not sure that the Astros would agree. However, Arnold says, I would say it was the Yankees since they have been so good at home. David says the Yankees. I'm an embarrassed Yankee fan and angry too. But others are saying the Broncos. Josh says to be winless at home, put up 6 points, allow 9 sacks is absolutely inexcusable. Scott says the Broncos to lose as bad as they did to a backup QB who wasn't even in the league last year and to not even be able to score against a defense who's let everybody score. Kyle says the Broncos losing at home to Matt Moore in an iffy running game when your defense is actually showing progress is inexcusable. So we're asking you, which team was more thoroughly embarrassed? On Twitter or on Facebook, coming up, we'll figure out what happens next for a Broncos team that on national TV just got smoked by a Kansas City Chiefs team that lost the NFL MVP early in the second quarter. 855-212-4227. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Moore is under center this time. Austin Ryder. They fake to McCoy. He's under pressure. Is Moore. He throws a corner pattern right. Caught at the 30-yard line. The Cheetah 25, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown, Kansas City. The high school teacher and coach burns the Broncos.
Excited for the win, division opponent, road game, all things that are hard to do. But at the same time, you know, a guy like Patrick gets hurt, it can be deflating. And he's obviously a huge part of this team, a huge part of the league. So you just hate to see that.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Matt Moore threw a 57-yard touchdown pass to Tyreek Hill. And for the Kansas City Chiefs and the Denver Broncos, that was the only touchdown in the second half of Thursday night football. Moore was coaching high school football when he got the call from the Chiefs to be the backup for Patrick Mahomes, who was injured, a dislocated kneecap, and we will find out what else as we move forward. But that was early in the second quarter, and as you hear Moore say post-game, this is bittersweet. It's great that the Chiefs ended that short losing skid, but now there's a lot of trepidation. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Mitch Holtis is the play-by-play voice of the Chiefs Radio Network. We are pleased to welcome from Denver Benjamin Albright, who covers the NFL and is part of both KOA Radio in Denver as well as iHeart Radio. They're in the stadium for Thursday night football. And so let's start with Mahomes because this is the biggest story to come out of this game. What did you see and hear after he got hurt in that second quarter?
Well, I can tell you it was patella, and they popped the dislocated knee back into place. There's some MRIs they have to run to see if there's additional damage. He's going to miss 4 weeks, potentially more if there's more damage, but minimum 3 to 4 weeks. And, you know, they're hoping to get him back soon, you know, that soon. But it's not a scenario where they're super sitting there saying, you know, this is going to be quick. They're trying to be super cautious with it.
So that's best case scenario, right? Is there a scenario where he could be out for the year if the damage is really
absolutely
extensive?
Yes, if the MRI shows tears and things that require surgery, he could definitely be out for the year.
Oh, gosh. I mean, that's like the NFL's worst nightmare. And yet, Matt Moore comes in, and I know there's a lot of help from the defense for the Chiefs we'll talk about, but Matt Moore comes in, and they actually managed to tread water, even though, did I see this correctly on your Twitter, that he did not take any reps to this point with the offense?
Has taken zero reps all season. How embarrassing is that for Denver?
That is a lot. But he certainly does have a, well, Pro Bowl in his past and some experience. All right, so let's talk about the defense then. What the defense was able to do to the Denver offensive line. How much of this is on Flacco for not being mobile, like cinder blocks for feet, and how much of this is on the O-line?
Well, it's a combination of both. I mean, you've got a backup guard in there playing right tackle in Elijah Wilkinson, who's stepping in for Juwan James. They spent all that money on him this offseason. They've got nothing for it. And then you turn around, you look at some of the other things that are going on here, and you've got a scenario which, you know, Garrett Bowles can't stop holding, and he can't protect when he's not doing that. And then Joe Flacco, who drifts way too far back in his drop and doesn't know how to step up and climb the pocket. And it's just a recipe for disaster. They keep taking bad sack after bad sack. They set a new Denver record for sacks in a game tonight.
How surprised are you, though, considering what the Chiefs had just gone through for the last 2 weeks and how the Broncos had made a concerted effort to run the football, and it seemed like they were at least steady, maybe not flashy on offense, but at least steady?
Well, we were very surprised. A lot of people really thought this was a trap game for Kansas City, that, you know, short week, Denver's run game's pretty stout, and, you know, you really felt like that this was a situation where Denver was going to come out and do something, and, man, they just flopped. They fell flat. You know, it's really kind of a stunner. Broncos fans kind of stunned by it all. And, you know, to trying to regroup or figure out what's going on here, you got people screaming fire sale out of one side of their mouth and trying to win football games out of the other. So it's going to be interesting next 10 days for this fan base with the bye.
Benjamin Albright with us from Denver following Thursday Night Football after working KOA, iHeartRadio post-game show. And so you talk to a lot of fans, but also you hear from inside the organization. Considering that there were back-to-back wins, how optimistic was the team, was the franchise going into this game?
Oh, very optimistic. They thought this was a win. They thought this was the get-back-on-track game. This was really going to be the game, you know, for this team to put them back in the national spotlight and get that monkey off their backs in terms of in terms of losing the Chiefs. They lost 7 straight before today, 8 straight now, and they really felt like this was the get right game, and unfortunately, it was not. They absolutely got embarrassed on national television.
Which is crazy, considering, as you talked about, that it was a game that set up perfectly for Denver. So considering the wide spectrum, all the possibilities, the things that the fans want to do, fire this guy, fire that guy, trade everybody, what is the most likely situation? How much could actually change?
I don't know, not that much. I don't think there's really going to be a fire sale like people are trying to intimate. I think it's one of those situations where you could see the team move a player or two, but the reality is that the players that they would move, they don't really have replacements for, you know. If you move Chris Harris, you're already short a bunch of corners. What are you going to plug in there? If you move Emmanuel Sanders, you know, you're already short a bunch of receivers. What are you going to plug in there? So it's just a situation where there's not a lot of options in terms of, you know, what you're going to do if you do go ahead and move players. So I think they could move Sanders or Harris, most likely Sanders. But in the end, I just don't see a scenario in which they have a fire sale and sell off just a ton of assets. They just don't have the talent to do that. There's not a lot of demand for who they have anyway.
Big Fangio in his first year, obviously, and came from the defensive side of the football. How would you evaluate him through the first 7 weeks of the season?
Well, I think he's been good. I think he's been perfectly fine. I just think the Broncos don't have the talent. You know, they don't have the talent to execute what it is that he wants to do. And, I think that, you know, him being an old school coach, he probably drives some of these guys a little bit harder than what they're used to. That's going through these practices, especially coming from a players coach like Vance Joseph. I think that it's been a difficult adjustment for some of these guys. But overall, you know, I think he's a great coach. I think he's a guy that has a lot of respect around the league for what it is that he does. And I enjoy his press conferences. You know, I'm kind of notorious around here for being a guy that doesn't actually go to press conferences because I find them worthless. But, going to his, he actually says and answers your questions. So, you know, for me, it's been kind of a breath of fresh air in terms of having him around.
Well, it's one thing to lose and get embarrassed like this. It's entirely another if the team kind of gives up and is not listening to the voice in the locker room anymore. Is any of that the truth with Denver?
No. I think they're still listening to what he's saying. I think there's all that going on. I just think they have the talent to execute, and you've got a couple of disgruntled bodies, and it's turned into a situation where they're going to have to figure something out going forward, because there's some of these guys know they're not the future. You know, they know they're not where this thing is going.
Benjamin Albright with us from Denver here after hours on CBS Sports Radio. So I saw also on your Twitter that the countdown to Drew Lock has begun. What kind of a countdown are we talking about?
Well, Drew Lock will be starting as soon as they're officially eliminated from playoff contention, if not before. It's fairly well known that that's probably the direction they were going to go if they lost. And that seems to be the indicator as far as a lot of this stuff goes right now. So, I think that people are looking forward to that, looking forward to getting him back off the IR and, you know, kind of seeing what he's available to do and what he can bring to the table. I thought he showed some flashes in the preseason. There's definitely some things to be excited about. I don't know if he's the answer, but he certainly looks like he could be.
So then what happens to Joe Flacco? My gosh.
Well, they their investment in Joe Flacco really isn't that much. They can get out from under him for about $10 million in dead cap next year. And with the cap carryover that they're going to have, that'll equal itself out anyway. So I think they're going to be okay in terms of that. And people talking about, that whole situation, I don't think there's a scenario in which they couldn't get out from it. Now, you could keep him around as a high-priced backup, although I think from ego's sake, he's probably not the guy who's going to want to do that. But, overall, they can get out from under him fairly inexpensively.
So and you just said this, you're not sure if Drew Lock is the future, the long-term solution. They obviously haven't had a true opportunity to evaluate him yet. Does that mean that moving forward, let's say 2020, they could be looking for another quarterback?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a possibility. I wouldn't necessarily say it's a probability, but they're definitely going to take a look at this quarterback class if Drew doesn't show that he's the guy that they're looking for. So, it's a league, it's a quarterback league, and if you don't have the guy, you're certainly trying to look for him. So,
Yeah, well, the Broncos are right there on that carousel with the Dolphins, with the, well, Arizona has found their guy now, but teams that just are constantly turning it over. I mean, it's been that way since Peyton Manning. When you look at the AFC West, it's not really like what people expected. The Chargers are a disaster. I've run out of ways to describe the Chargers now. And the Chiefs, even though they won tonight, we don't know about Pat Mahomes. What's your opinion about the division now?
Man, it's an up for grabs division. You know, if Pat Mahomes is out any appreciable amount of time, it really does become a division that really is up for grabs. So it'd be interesting to see who takes advantage of that. If you got you got an Oakland team, it's kind of looked better or shown some signs of life, or you know, whether the Broncos can miraculously turn it around last minute. I don't think anybody's expecting that, but you know, we've seen stranger things happen.
I would think that would be an amazing storyline. After everything that the Raiders went through in the preseason, I know a lot of it had to do with Antonio Brown, but for them now even to be above 500 after all the moves that Gruden made, and now the division is, as you say, it's there, but at least they are right in the mix. It's crazy.
Well, yeah. It is, and that's one of those things. It's just amazing to see, you know, exactly where this is. I mean, yeah, you don't got the Chargers out either. They've got a talented team on paper. Nobody's really talking about. They've had their missteps, but you know, they could surprise people out of nowhere. I just think it's just an odd division that's really in a state of flux at the moment. And you know, overall, it'd be interesting to see how this thing shakes out.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.